climb into the cockpit with pilot and Link Square's Chief Legal Officer, Tim Perilla, as he invites legal leaders aboard to share advice that will help you navigate even the most turbulent times of in-house counsel work. We'll cover a range of topics from data privacy to legal team structure to public company transactions and beyond. You don't want to miss this series. Fasten your seatbelt and prepare for takeoff. You're listening to Cockpit Counsel.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Cockpit Counsel. My name is Tim and I'm the Chief Legal Officer at Link Squares.
And I'm Alyssa Verzino, producer and co-host of the show. Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe. Now let's jump into our next episode.
Today with us, we have Shai Mahani. Shai is the founder of In-House Connect. Had a great career beforehand. We're going to get into it. But Shai, we start every show the same way. What is your pre-flight ritual before you get on a plane?
So I love this question. And I just have to say, the airports these days, they have so many food options. It's like they have more food options than they do in the cities themselves. It's amazing. But my pre-flight ritual is to buy a bottle of water.
Okay.
I hate sitting in my seat waiting for a drink service to start. I'm thirsty. I'm hot. Like, I got to have water at my disposal. And I'm so happy that airports these days have $2 bottles of water now instead of, like, you know, only the $8 Essentia bottles of water.
Yeah. Are like 2-liter bottles.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like
I'm good with 16 ounces.
Or like the regular, you know, Poland Spring, you know, it's wonderful. So got to have that. And then I have water whenever I want, after the flight, during the flight. It's wonderful.
That's perfect. So let's talk a little bit about your career. Like, what made you go to school? What did you want to do when you were in school? And how did that lead you to here?
I have a super random, interesting, career arc. So I went to law school because really it played to my strengths. I was good at reading, writing, speaking, and it made my mom happy. So that was like, that's really like the number one reason that I went to law school. So I went to law school, had a great experience. Unfortunately, I graduated in the worst time, in the most recent worst time for new lawyers, right at the height of the Great Recession. So graduated in 2010. And, you know, it's interesting how much of your career is tied to luck and circumstances outside your control. But in hindsight, I wouldn't change a thing. So basically in 2010, graduated, I got very lucky. I got a state court clerkship in New Jersey. I'm from New Jersey, a New Jersey native. And my judge was in the matrimonial division.
Okay.
So that was my clerkship. I learned all about matrimonial law and like divorce and, you know, alimony, child support, all of that good stuff. And I ended up practicing matrimonial law for the next 3 years.
Okay.
Certainly, that's not what I ever imagined when I went to law school.
While you're sitting in con law, just dreaming about the day you can be doing matrimonial law.
Or like, you're trying to figure out what you're going to take for, I don't know, the third semester. It's like family law has spots open. I'm like, no way am I taking family law, right? So ended up doing family law. And it was interesting. I got a lot of great skills. And it was a valuable experience. The problem is I did not want to practice matrimonial law. You know, I like it when people are together and happy, and that ain't the case in matrimonial law.
Right.
But it was a valuable experience in that I learned how to negotiate contracts. I learned how to, you know, negotiate period and handle high stressful environments. Mm-hmm. So a junior in-house counsel role opened up at a tech startup, and they were basically looking for somebody who could negotiate contracts and who could handle stressful environments, because believe it or not, tech startups are a little bit chaotic, or can be at least.
They absolutely can be.
You know, and so I got very lucky. I got this job. That was my big break, and that kicked off my in-house counsel career. And I basically learned how to negotiate contracts, MSAs, SOWs. It was wonderful, wonderful experience. I had great mentors, and I learned a lot. And when I joined this, or when I got this role, I was so scared that I was really going in very cold, you know, like from matrimonial law to commercial contracts. And I was so scared I was going to not succeed at this job and have to go back to matrimonial law that I was very motivated to network. So I looked up networking opportunities. There was, you know, the ACC and, I could have joined that, but I didn't want to, I couldn't afford $400. You know, it's just too expensive for me. So I found a meetup group for in-house counsel. It was free. It met once a month in New York City where I was living and working. And I joined and I started to attend these events, and it was basically monthly CLE panels hosted by different law firms. And I loved it. I loved it. I loved networking with, I made lots of new friends. I learned a lot. I got free CLE, which is always great. And I just became a frequent flyer. And that's really, you know, in like hindsight, what got me to where I am today.
So as far as the networking side of it, you were like right out of the gate in your career, you're going that direction.
Totally. It was super important. And like I learned from the matrimonial days how valuable it was to network because it's a small world. You know, you have the same adversaries, the judges, you know, you need to meet the judges. It's like a small, small world. And I knew that, you know, if things go bad, I need to have networking is the type of thing, or a network is the type of thing that when you need it, you can't build it.
Right.
It has to be there before. So I was very keen on networking, and I really was scared that, you know, if something went wrong and I, you know, got fired or something too early, I wouldn't have enough experience to get another in-house role. So I was very motivated to network and meet fellow in-house counsel.
So obviously you saw that there was a need for something a little bit, I don't want to say better, but broader, more defined. Like at what point in your career did you start saying, all right, I want to make this a focus for me?
Yeah. So it's really interesting. And kind of funny just to talk about it in hindsight. For the next like the next 4 or 5 years, I got more involved in this group, right? I started to organize CLE panels, we organized mixers, and I always was trying to like figure out how to make it into a business, you know, this meetup group, but I can never figure out, you know, nothing ever like worked, right? We weren't big enough, and I wasn't gonna let, you know, like Zoom wasn't a thing. So really for the next several years, I just did it to, because I enjoyed it, because I enjoyed the networking. I enjoyed organizing events. I enjoyed, the people who came, and it was really just a professional, endeavor. And I had like moved around a bunch, like the tech startup, you know, it was chaotic. It ended up going into bankruptcy, about 13 months after I joined. I had left before that happened. I had worked at Saks Fifth Avenue. I was a commercial counsel there.
Nice.
This was awesome, and I got a great employee discount, which I wish I still had.
Good experience too, I'm sure.
The experience was phenomenal. I worked all across the company, and it just brought my skill level to another level. From there, I actually worked as an Axiom attorney. I had two different assignments. I got to work at Casper Mattress, you know, the first mattress in a box company.
Yep.
That was super awesome. And then Salesforce. So that was also really, really interesting. I never worked on like a cloud computing type like contract, like order forms and instances and stuff. I'm sure like you're super familiar with that here.
Now I am.
I thought I knew what I was doing before, but like completely different ball game. So that was super valuable. And all throughout these like different roles, I was organizing events for this meetup group.
Yeah, so you're like moonlighting on this whole like building a network situation, right?
I really, throughout this point, I never, I wanted it to be profitable. I wanted it to generate money, but at no point in the first like 6 or 7 years was I ever like, okay, this can be, you know, this is going to be my future, like right here. But I knew what we were doing was valuable. I enjoyed it. And I thought there was potential, but I never, you know, it really wasn't like an intentional thing that one day this is going to be all I do.
Right.
So what ended up happening was I was working at this point, I was working at Optimum Cable, which is okay. Altice. It's a telecom provider in New York City. Cablevision, right? It's the company that bought Cablevision.
Yep.
And things were going great with In-House Connect. We're growing. It's wonderful. Still not making any money. And I have a funny story about that. The only money we ever made, but I'll pause. still not making any money, but I enjoyed it. Then COVID hits.
Okay.
And here's where things start to change. Okay. So I had this, really it all starts there. I saw that Zoom was becoming, you know, ubiquitous and like got super, super strong traction across the country. And webinars were super popular and so on. And I thought to myself, we can't meet in person. What if we took the concept and put it online? You know, right. We keep it everything pretty much the same. It's free. I couldn't do CLE at the time, but I figure, you know, we'll do some content that's in-house counsel focused. Mm-hmm. And I'll go out, I'll put it on LinkedIn, I'll invite people, and we'll see. Maybe, and then we'll do virtual networking afterwards. We did like breakout rooms afterwards.
Yeah.
So I did that for a few webinars. It worked beautifully. We had over 100 people each time, and people were really networking, and I was like thrilled. And I saw an opportunity at that point to, I figured if we can get to a big enough audience, then opportunities will be there. Then this can like really, you know, grow into something substantial.
Yeah.
So that's when things change and I start to get more serious about it.
Yeah. And so obviously like it's very, it at its heart has always been very community driven, community first, which is great. And that's one of the things that I love about IHC is that, you know, the handful of events and webinars that I've been fortunate enough to be a part of, it has had this community feel. And, you know, I like the event in New York, it was surprising to me how many people were like there at the very end, like, okay, like the event technically ended like 45 minutes ago. Like, and there's still like a lot of people hanging out, just like wanting to talk, wanting to get to know each other. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah. We like the first like 5 or 6 years or whatever that period, like pre-COVID, I really took my role as an organizer, as the host. Like I felt like I was the host and these people were my guests, right? Yeah. So I made sure to I was warm and I was inviting. And if I saw somebody who's alone, you know, with a plate of salad or whatever, I would go and talk to them myself and I would introduce them. And so I part of, you know, embedded in the DNA of IHC is that warmth and that vibe. And it's a miracle, truly a miracle, that the vibe has extended across like virtually, right? The webinars are like super, you know, the chat box is very active. I love it. People network, they ask questions, they, you know, sometimes it's on topic, sometimes it's not.
It's
just fun. It's you know, people who are in the same town or, you know, there's always some guy who asks if there's any Canadians in the audience, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
You know, it's really a pleasure to see and it's wonderful to see.
What are some of the things that you've, maybe some of the challenges you had to deal with when you went from like, okay, this is something I like during COVID, I guess, where you really made that full cut over, like what was kind of the hardest above beyond what I would imagine would be the full-time leap of faith?
The full-time leap of faith came a little bit later. Okay. The COVID period, I was still proof of concepting and growing. But in the beginning was by far the hardest, like getting it off the ground, figuring out, you know, what is going to drive more people.
Yeah.
I was 100% reliant on LinkedIn and, you know, you can invite people to your events through LinkedIn. And that was the only way people like heard about our events. And I said, you know, I got to get an email list. I have to like, you know, that's really what drives attendance. I've come to learn. So building an email list, you know, and there's like challenges with that. People move, people's emails bounce. I don't, it's a whole right. thing. I'm sure Alyssa can commiserate with that. So that was super challenging. Working with people on this, I found that to be super challenging. You know, I had some really helpful people in the beginning and they added like a ton of value. And then, you know, to manage that, like it was just so too much going on to like manage them and keep us on the right foot and growing and executing that. Ultimately, like I just did, I didn't do everything myself necessarily, but I just kind of took everything over and like pretty much did it all myself with some help, obviously.
Right.
So like just getting it off the ground to a point where it was consistent. The website was good. We had a lot of people. That was enormously challenging. And then last but certainly not least, and this is not a challenge that has that doesn't exist today, getting financial support, getting sponsors.
Right.
It's not, it is, you know, like upon reflection, it is extremely hard to provide free, high quality CLE and networking, you know, opportunities at really nice venues that are completely free to the attendees, completely free.
Right.
It's challenging to get sponsors. It's competitive. There's a lot of really great groups out there who, you know, kind of do similar stuff. And that was, you know, it's hard today. It's a little less hard, I would say, because, you know, we're really established, but it was infinitely more hard when I was just, you know, starting out and trying to get traction with law firms and legal tech companies.
Yeah, absolutely. That, I mean, that's the hardest part, I think, with just about any business you're going to start is how do you get, and tell me if I'm thinking about this the wrong way, but in a lot of ways, when you're thinking about your community, you have two products. One of them is your community and the other is the content that you bring to the community.
Yeah. I like to think of it as serving two different audiences.
Yeah.
Like I serve my community, my in-house counsel, and I serve my sponsors. At the end of the day, they keep the lights on. And that's something that I, you know, I never ever lose sight of. And I think is somewhat of a competitive advantage for me. I invest very heavily in my relationships with my sponsors. And, you know, I really care about delivering a great experience. Yeah. And that, you know, and thankfully it's been a good approach and we've had great experiences and great collaborations and hopefully many more on the horizon. But that's like a key differentiator, you know. It's like I never really rested on my laurels on either for the in-house counsel or for the sponsors.
Yeah, absolutely. So how big is the community now?
So it's an interesting question because I look at it. So like, what do you mean by community? So like, so it's interesting because In-House Connect, we're not a traditional membership group, right? You know, you can make an account on the website, but that, you know, anybody can come on pretty much and sign up for our webinars. And I like it like that. When I was just starting out, it was enormously beneficial to me to have access to that meetup group. And I don't want to, you know, put up a paywall for people and prevent them from accessing our content for that reason.
Right.
So it's really interesting. That being said, you know, numbers are numbers, right? We have over 50,000 subscribers to our email list. It's a lot of people. I'm just grateful I don't get you know, attacked for sending so many emails out because I send out a lot of emails and apologies, people. I just really, really want you to come to the webinars. So the 50,000 is like the core. And then we have tens of thousands of connections on LinkedIn, tens of thousands of followers, of group members. And, you know, theoretically, our audiences or our community is as big as the legal departments in the country, in the world.
Right.
Anybody, you know, anybody can come and enjoy. And I totally, you know, I tell our webinar attendees, I tell our Mixer attendees, tell your friends, tell your in-house legal colleagues to come and you know, sign up and enjoy. So it's an interesting question.
Well, it's, I mean, I was, when I went on the first, I did the first webinar. I remember looking at like the number of people who were in attendance. And I like had to take a breath. I was like, oh man, like, all right, let's just minimize that part of that. Focus on Jonathan. but yeah, I mean, you just get outstanding. And then the event we did in New York, just outstanding attendance. And I think one of the things that that I've been impressed with is seeing the depth of experience within the membership. You got people who have been practicing for a long time. You got people who are new to their careers. And I think they all bring something meaningful to the community. And, you know, that's not an easy mix to get.
Yeah, right? We, you know, it's interesting. I do a lot of, I try and serve, I try and like organize webinars across different topics.
Yep.
You know, I try, I don't know if I can like serve everybody, but you know, we do a good job of staying top of mind and organizing relevant webinars. And I think, you know, they're high quality, they're free CLE. I just want to make it easy for people to tune in. Like, you know, it's like why, kind of like a lunch and learn type format. Yeah. And, you know, again, it's, I work, you know, I don't know if you were on that that tech check webinar call for the first one. But, you know, I do that with every webinar.
We have a
pre-check. If I know it's going to be a lot of people, you know, we average over 400 attendees per webinar, and that's an average. So it could be 700, 800, you know, a thousand, it could be whatever.
Yeah.
So I and it's not an easy thing. You know, you're not something that happens every day. So I always make sure to prep them, and especially with our active chat box and the questions and the, you know, it's important that they're prepared. And that's my job, is to make sure that they have a great, the speakers have a great experience.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and they anticipate that it's going to be a lot. It's going to be 500 people, and it's going to be a lot of questions. And, you know, so that they're not surprised, because that's like, that's a worst case scenario, is, you know, you're unprepared and it's like 700 people. That's recipe for disaster. And that's not what I want for anybody.
Right. Although it is, you know, it is a ton of fun when you have a lot of engagement. Like, it just makes, it makes the conversation go, you know, go a lot easier. I think, you know, what I found a little bit different about the in-person event versus the webinar with in that regard was that I think with the webinar, you're kind of pulled back to your outline, right? Or your topics. Like, you can't just take the entire next 20 minutes going down some rabbit trail,
right?
You know, because someone asked a question when you have 500 people there who are looking, like, who literally signed up for that content. I think it's like a little bit different with some of the, you know, live, because you see, like, you can read the room a little bit and see if people are actually responding to this or if they're kind of yawning and pecking on their phones and stuff. So
it's a completely different vibe. And that one, that was like a fun one. I think there was like a back and forth, like, you know, there was like somebody asked a question and then another person was like, oh yeah, that was a good question. A follow up on that question, you know,
right.
It's like, it was a great, it was a great in-person event. You and Nanesh did a great job. Shout out Nanesh.
Yeah.
He's a great co-presenter.
Yeah. He's awesome. I just met him through that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what an impressive guy.
Awesome.
Absolutely awesome. Impressive guy.
Awesome.
So, you know, when you think about, let me ask this in two ways. What's next, and how does that further the value that you're bringing to the members?
That's a great question. It's something I think about all the time, frankly, every day. So what's next? So I guess we'll start with what's happening now. Webinars, we did a ton of webinars, and I don't think that's going to change. I would like to do more webinars.
Yeah.
We've done 80 webinars this year so far, and we love the webinars. They work great, and that's not gonna change. What I am adding is in-person mixers.
Okay.
So, you know, every week or every 2 weeks or 3 weeks, we're going to go to different cities and host mixers, you know, after work mixers. There will be drinks, dinner, and just networking. And that's that's the script. I'm really lucky to have a nationwide audience. I feel like I can go to any city in the country, and host a mixer that is well attended and well received by the attendees. I've done a number this year already. New York, we had a lot of people. LA, which a magical night in LA. Austin, nice. A beautiful night. And I've like several more lined up.
I feel like LA is one of those communities that probably needs a little bit more attention from an in-house perspective, because San Francisco sucks so much oxygen off that coast, right? Because there's just like so many, like, and maybe I'm a little bit like, you know, maybe I'm a little bit hyper-focused on that just because I'm in the tech space, but there are a ton of like non-tech companies everywhere with in-house attorneys, but it just feels like San Francisco, like when people think about, oh, let's do a lawyer event in California, it's usually in San Francisco. Yeah.
It's really interesting you say that, because the vibe in LA was really special. I had a lot of people, and I have to kind of figure out like why that is, but I had a lot of people who they watch a lot of webinars.
Yeah.
So that was great. Like a lot of their big IEC fans, and they were super appreciative of the opportunity to mingle and mix with fellow in-house, you know, counsel. And a number of them had told me that they're fully remote. So, you know, they don't really get to interact with many people generally. A number of them said they're not part of any other professional groups. So they don't have this opportunity, period, to meet and mingle with other in-house counsel. So It's funny you say that, because it was like an extra charged atmosphere, I would say.
Especially when you've got like really, really strong law firm presence in that area. Like, you know, there's enough business in LA. Granted, there's a lot of entertainment industry stuff.
Yeah.
But LA is a massive, massive area. Like,
Century
I mean,
City.
It's like all of Southern California. It's not just LA, right?
Yeah.
It's within 3.5 hours of LA. But like, there's a lot of business out there to be had, and with that comes a lot of in-house lawyers, and you know, I know a handful of them, and they've kind of reiterated that they're like, there's really not a ton of community things for me to do, and it's tough because my lawyer contacts are mostly my law firm contacts, which is an interesting thing.
For sure.
In a lot of ways. So.
This LA problem exists across the country.
Yeah.
And it's an opportunity, a unique opportunity for In-House Connect to fill and bring these people together. And it's something I'm super, super excited about. I just started, you know, it's good I'm on Cockpit Council because I've started flying a lot.
Right.
And I'm super excited for next year. I think we're going to do many, many, many mixers. You know, it's kind of just a budget thing,
Of course.
Like that's like we never did, but this is not something we did before. And now we started to do it. Now, you know, firms, legal tech companies are going to, sign up, and, you know, with more sponsorship, I can do more stuff is basically the equation. So I see a lot more in-person mixers. I'm working on a blog. I want to, provide some blog content. I'm not sure if we're going to do news necessarily, but there's
news
a lot.
News is a tough spot.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe one day. Who knows?
Right.
But like just a blog about our webinars. You know, if you missed it, you want to watch a recap. Or you want to read a recap. I think that's enormously valuable. I'd love to write blog content about our speakers, our presenters, about Tim, right?
Yeah.
About Jonathan, about Ashlyn, right? There's so many like wonderful speakers that we have.
I think there's
a real opportunity there. And then I'm not sure if it's next year or what, but it's certainly, on my radar. I want to do a conference.
Yeah.
Maybe like, I don't know if it'll be a big conference or regional conferences or what. But for sure we're going to do a conference.
Yeah.
I just have to, when we're talking about this pre-show, I have to figure out what's the best way of executing on this conference, and how do we, like, our webinars are fantastic, our in-person events are fantastic, and our conferences are going to be fantastic. I just have to figure out like what that combination is.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So a lot on the horizon, you know, fingers crossed we execute perfectly on everything.
I think you'll be fine.
That's awesome. Well, we'll transition a little bit to our Ask an Expert section of the show. Okay. So we have some questions to get your advice on, and okay. You too, Tim, if you have
Who's
any.
Who's the expert?
All right. So the first one, which you've touched on, is what networking advice do you have for fully remote employees?
Yeah. So the key for fully remote employees is you have to be top of mind. Like, yeah, you have to internalize this. Like, that is your challenge of being fully remote. Like, how do you be top of mind? So my number one piece of advice is to be proactive. Proactively, like when you start a new position, those first 90 days, you have it's not a get out of jail free card, but you have a card to reach out to anybody in the org and say, hey, I'm new. I want to learn about your role. I want to learn about how I can support you. Please, can we get a virtual coffee or, you know, can I get some time on your calendar? That's like essential. Be proactive with doing virtual coffees, virtual lunches with your colleagues. Check in, stay top of mind with your supervisor the same way. Offer, if you're in the same city as other colleagues, offer to get lunch with them or drinks, you know, be proactive. Make sure people that know that you're there. And then do your best to be proactive in team meetings as well. If there's opportunities for additional assignments, it's a challenge. And it's important to acknowledge this. It's a challenge when you're 100% remote. People in the office, I don't know if it's a new trend because this was always the way it was, but companies are bringing people back to the office now more than they ever were. So, you know, you're kind of fighting an uphill battle as a fully remote employee. So you have to be extra proactive and extra visible. In order to succeed, get promoted, and level the playing field with those who are in the office and are, you know, potentially more visible than you.
Yeah. The only thing that I would add would be if you're a little later in your career and others reach out to you like a LinkedIn cold message or something like that. And I'm not always the best about this, but I try to be, like, you know, particularly with folks who are local, is like, yeah, like I'll get on a Zoom with you and, you know, or, oh, you're going to be at that thing. Like, yeah, let's make sure we find each other. Right. Yeah. Like that kind of thing is because you never know where those young people are going to end up, yeah. You know, in their career, what they're going to do. Quite frankly, like, I find it pretty rewarding to help others like achieve their goals. And if I can open any doors, then. Good. I mean, everybody needs that little help.
So. Definitely. I that spurred one more thought. And that is, if your company has a retreat or, you know, a rah-rah day, whatever it is, 100% be there. You know, like there's certain things like quarterly earnings days or, you know, conferences, you know, Dreamforce, like, I don't know, you know, there's a lot of different conferences. If that comes up, go, you know, do whatever it takes to be there, because the whole company will be together. It's an enormously valuable opportunity to network and be visible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That leads nicely into the next question, which is, how do you recommend finding a mentor early in your career, or steps to take towards professional development?
Yeah, I think it starts in law school, actually. I would say all law schools have some sort of mentorship program with alumni. And those are like super valuable, and it's a lot easier to go through the law school as opposed to, you know, cold messaging Tim or me for advice. And it's a lot, you know, more successful. So start early on, and those relationships will last. Like I did it a couple of times myself, and, you know, I still stay in touch with my mentees. Mm. So super valuable opportunity there. Next, I would say you have to be intentional about who you're reaching out to and why. not just because, you know, somebody has, I don't know, 10,000 followers and, you know, writes funny posts, should you reach out and seek mentorship with them, or even if because they're the GC or whatever. You should always have like a point in what you're doing. So that starts with identifying an industry you want to be a part of, identifying a practice area, identifying, you know, a subject matter that you're really passionate about. And then you can like reach out to somebody like Tim or whomever and say, hey, you know, I'm a law student or I'm a young in-house lawyer. I want to, you know, deepen my knowledge of data privacy. Do you have any advice for me or something like that? That will go a lot farther than, you know, I'm working at a firm and I want to go in-house, or, you know, I'm a law student. I want to go in-house. Do you have any like general stuff? It's not as compelling as, you know, somebody with a demonstrated interest in a particular area that also overlaps with your own experience. So, you know, be intentional and start early is my advice.
Yeah. And the only thing I would add to that is, to the extent that you can, like, if you are early in your career, you're fortunate enough to figure out like how to be in-house early, you can build your network massively by going to the events that the firms that are representing you are putting on, like just in, you know, in your city, like so-and-so is doing like, you know, even if it's something that like is not applicable to you, like, oh, like, you know, you're not a public company and it's a securities something or other thing. Like, more likely than not, you're going to have a lot of in-house attorneys at that, like, you know, how to deal with the SEC thing that, you know, big law is putting on. So go, I would like, I went to a bunch of those things early on in my career.
I when I was at that tech startup, we had like this litigation in Louisiana, and we ended up using a big law firm, and the relationship partner from that engagement I'm still in contact with today. It's a great point. You know, when you're young in your career, right, there's advantages and disadvantages. It's a huge advantage because, you know, the stakes are a lot lower and it's a lot easier for them to build a relationship with you and, you know, kind of develop it over time. I love that. And very close with that law firm. And, you know, it all started there. So super, super great point.
Any advice or thoughts on building your brand at different stages in your career?
Yeah, so it's a great question. I think you have to, so it's interesting. I guess there's a couple of things. If you know what you want to do, right? If you want, you know, you want to be in telecom, if you know you want to do data privacy or AI or whatever, that's really half the battle. And once you have that focus, you know what you want, then you have to be like really consistent in building your expertise or your, you know, connection to those subjects. If you don't know what you want, it's a lot harder, right, to build a brand. But there's lots of ways to build a brand. You know, you can make funny memes on LinkedIn, right? You know, you can write thought-provoking posts. You can do updates. There's a whole host of things. But I think ultimately, the more specific you are, it all really starts with the specificity. You know, if you have an idea of where you want to be or what you want to, you know, talk about and what you want to be an expert in, that's like the first question you have to answer. And then, you know, it all kind of falls into place. If you're, you know, an expert in AI, you can write blog posts, you can write on LinkedIn, you can then, that'll open doors for speaking opportunities and webinars and so on and so forth. And then from there, you know, the sky's the limit. So I think the first thing you have to do, identify what you want your brand to be associated with, or, you know, what subject you want to tie yourself to.
For me, I just do whatever Alyssa tells me to do and go that way. But no, I think one of the things that Alyssa, you told me like early on is that it's really important that whatever you're doing, it's like genuinely you.
Yeah.
Like, people can sense when you're just trying to like make stuff to get followers and things like that.
Yeah.
And in like, I mean, maybe if we were like doing, you know, some like, I don't know, street crime thing on LinkedIn or something like that, like, or on TikTok or something like that. Like, it's a different environment than, like, you know, than LinkedIn, and like trying to, you know, trying to have it a little bit married to your professional aspirations.
I think, you know, for in-house counsel, at least, or in-house legal, I mean, LinkedIn is the one, two, and three of where you want to be and where you want to focus. And there's, it's a really, we're very fortunate that it's not like Twitter or something else. And there's a lot of ways to build a brand. You know, you can, I mean, there are really, like, so many ways. There's somebody who makes, like, fun musical videos every Monday. They post this. It's really, it's awesome. Like, they're in legal tech and he makes, like, musical videos. It's really cool. There's others who, you know, make funny memes or funny videos. People write long form, you know, posts. People just write back and, like, you know, comment on posts. There's so many ways. It's really, you're only limited by your imagination. So, you know, be bold, not to be too bold, but be bold and, you know, bring your personality to LinkedIn, and good things will happen.
Love it. All right. Well, we went end every episode with some rapid fire questions. So
it's over already.
I know.
I want to stay.
We'll have to have you back.
Okay.
Part two.
You got it.
What is your hot take on working in-house?
So here's my hot take. Every in-house lawyer, 100% of in-house lawyers will say that they are business-minded, but they're not really business-minded, or they're not truly business-minded. And what do I mean by that? I think the average in-house lawyer will say, you know, in a contract negotiation, and there's, like, you know, a minor, there's, like, an edit about choice of law, you know, is it Delaware, is it New York? I'm not going to fight over this. I'll be business minded and, like, you know, I'll give up. We'll do Delaware, you know, and I'm so business minded. Like, look, I didn't, like, hold up the deal. That's not being business minded. I worked my last boss, I'm not going to mention his name. He doesn't love attention, but he was the most wonderful boss I ever had. And he was so business minded, and he spoke the business's language. Like, can you, like, so here are some, like, what do I mean by this? Right. Do you listen to your company's earnings calls? Like, period. Do you even, like, listen to them? And if you listen, do you understand the questions that are being asked? Do you understand the answers? Do you understand, you know, the differences in the quarters? Do you understand the lingo? Do you understand who the competitors in your industry are? Do you understand what's happening with them? Do you understand how they're, you know, pricing their services or their products, or how they market their services and their products? Are there mergers or acquisitions in those, you know, in the industry? And how does that impact you? How are you different? How are you the same? Have you looked at your company's balance sheet? You know, do you understand that? The terminology that your sales or, you know, ops people look at, you know, ARPU, you know, like there's acronym SALAD in the telecom world. Okay. There's so many, I didn't know, like, I thought it was gibberish, you know, and, like, do you understand those acronyms? Truly, like, once you can have a meaningful conversation with somebody in the business on their level, with their acronyms, understanding the different things in the business, then you're really business minded. Like, if you knew, if you know, like, what the company did a year ago and what it's doing now and why, you know, that is truly being business minded. And I think, you know, there are certainly many in-house counsel who truly are business minded, but the vast majority think that they are and are actually not.
That's a great
hot take. Do you agree? I'm afraid, Tim.
1,000%. 1,000%. Like, rarely is it that, like, giving something on a contract makes you business minded.
Right.
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 It's just kind of,
awesome. All right. If Tim agrees, yeah. I know.
1,000%.
There you go. What's your number one networking tip?
So, in my opinion, the key to networking is the realization that this is an investment. You have to invest, and investments require multiple investments. So really the key to networking is being consistent and being, you know, and staying with it. So for instance, if there's a, like with In-House Connect, you know, 6-7 years ago, we met monthly. I never missed a CLE. I had plenty of CLE, okay? I like could bank my CLE for the rest of my career, right? I didn't need the CLE. But I went to every CLE panel. And when you go to something regularly, the people, you know, you become a regular. People see you like, oh, hey, Shai, like, you know, good to see you again. How's everything? You know, that is the key to building relationships. It's really in the consistency and the repetition. So be prepared. You know, if you're setting off on your networking journey, if you want to build that network, you know, say to yourself, this is an investment. It's not, you know, this is an investment that requires a once a month or, you know, twice a month commitment or whatever it is. But be prepared to make that commitment and understand that that's what it takes for this to bear fruit. Because if you go to like a one-off conference, you know, you'll make friends, but then, you know, so often you won't stay in touch with these people, right? You'll get business cards and, you know, you'll connect on LinkedIn and that's it. Like, you know, so many, I'm like Mr. Networker over here. I have so many people that I've networked with that I have not followed up with, that I've not stayed in touch with. That's why the key is to be, you know, consistent and make that investment. And if you do, that network will pay off for you 10 times.
That's great. And what is your advice for achieving work-life balance?
So I think it's deceptively simple, but that is to block off time on your calendar. There is nothing, you know, more annoying than you have like, you know, you have like your afternoon is open. You're like, okay, I'm going to work on this contract. I'm going to work on that. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Then, you know, somebody out of the blue teams you and he's like, hey, we're on a call. Can you join? You know, and it looks like you're open. You have nothing going on because it's like clear. But, you know, you're about to like edit something. You're about to and then, okay, you get pulled into that call because you can't like really say no. And then, you know, you're on that call for like, who knows, hours. And then you got to go back and do the stuff that you did before. Tim is laughing because, you know, because that's happened to him. That's a recognition lab.
Yep.
You know, that is the worst. That is the worst. So my advice, block off time on your calendar liberally. Take the lunch, you know, block off at the 5 o'clock time period. And if you have like, you know, stuff that you need to work on, you know, block it off and say like, you know, whatever, XYZ MSA or XYZ SOW. That way you won't get pulled into too many things. You can have plausible deniability and, you know, hopefully you'll preserve your work-life balance.
Yeah, it's like the functional, the reason I was laughing is because there's like the hey you up corporate equivalent of like, hey, got a sec?
Oh.
That's always my favorite. Like from
Tim, you're gonna inspire a meme with that line. That's like, you know, things Friday, right? Friday, 4 o'clock on the sun in the summer Friday, hey, you got a sec. That's like the dreaded message.
Friday 7:15 from someone who you can't say no to.
There you go.
Oh yeah, those are always the most fun.
Yeah. So well, this has been a load of fun.
Yeah, this has been awesome, Shai. Thanks so much for joining us, and great to see you. Great to catch up again. And thanks everyone for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for joining us. And if you have any topics for discussion or guests you'd like to see on the show, feel free to submit them to cockpitcouncil@linksquares.com.